Hey guys, and welcome to the Heavy Lies the Helmet, aka the Health Podcast. We are your host, Mike Boone, along with my brother, Brian Boone, and this is episode 13.
So for this episode, we're going to talk about something that may be occurring more often than we or other clinicians even realize, and that is serotonin toxicity or serotonin syndrome. You may hear us using either of those terms interchangeably. Really, either of those terms are acceptable. We know that toxicity is preferred by some because it really helps to reflect really what's going on with these patients, and that they really have too much effect of serotonin on their body. We know that the reason why this may be not diagnosed as readily as it occurs is that sometimes the symptoms can be mild. They can range from very mild symptoms to very severe and life-threatening symptoms. So sometimes these mild symptoms may just be contributed to a side effect of medication. Other things that can contribute to the lack of diagnosis with these symptoms is that the clinicians may just be unaware of the syndrome. There are varying diagnostic criteria that can be used, or it may just be misdiagnosed. There are other things that can present very similarly. So really, we have to have a good understanding of what serotonin syndrome is to effectively identify this in our patient. We do know that the number of cases has increased. If we think about the number of our patients that are on serotonergic medications, it is no doubt increasing. It seems like everybody's on some type of a mood stabilizing medication, such as an SSRI, which is a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor for depression or anxiety, those type of things. We see that so common these days. And there are things that we can do to make this worse. So we're going to talk about that as well. There are medications that we carry in our pocket all the time when we are transporting patients that are serotonergic and that can contribute and make this syndrome even worse. So we have to be aware of those things. We also know that there's a lot of different combinations of medications that can cause serotonin syndrome. So it may be an interaction between a couple of different medications that affect serotonin receptors in different ways. Or it may be from an overdose of a serotonergic medication.
To touch a little bit further on the mechanism, Brian touched on this a little bit, but if you think about it simply, there's a lot of different avenues that lead to serotonin syndrome, but ultimately it's determined by increasing levels of serotonin in the body or just overactivation of receptors and synthesis of serotonin. So specifically, we're going to be talking about the inhibition of serotonin uptake, decreased serotonin metabolism, increased serotonin synthesis, as we mentioned, increased serotonin release, and the activation of those serotonergic receptors. Now, when we're discussing these receptors, we don't want to get too in-depth with this because it's not always applicable for us. It's more information that is interesting to know but isn't always necessarily valuable in taking care of these patients, except when we start to talk about signs and symptoms. And really, we can break this down into peripheral receptors and central receptors because both of these areas have serotonin receptors. And they're going to produce different symptoms depending on which receptors are being overactivated, etc. So when we're talking about the peripheral receptors specifically, these function to stimulate things like vasoconstriction, uterine contraction, bronchoconstriction, GI motility, and platelet aggregation. But as we get into more central serotonin, we're going to see things that are affected anywhere from the brainstem to the midbrain to the medulla. So you're going to see more of those neurological symptoms. And this can be presenting in things such as wakefulness, attention, affective behavior, so any kind of anxiety or anything like that, psychological manifestations, depression, sexual behavior, appetite, thermoregulation, motor tone, migraines, emesis, and aggression. So there's a lot of things there that can be affected by this. And again, that's why this becomes a complex syndrome and why these symptoms are often attributed to other things, because it covers such a wide array of areas and manifestations. So we want to consider some of those things as we start to delve into the different severity levels and we get into how the drugs are going to affect these things and attribute to our patients displaying these things.
So there are a multitude of medications that can contribute to serotonin syndrome. Multiple drug combinations, and we'll talk about some of these. We're not going to be all-inclusive in this. We can't talk about every single medication. However, there will be a list attached to the show notes, so you can reference that. But we will, throughout this episode, mention some of those that we will see more commonly. So, as Mike touched on how the serotonin receptors work, depending on the medication that the patient is on and how it affects that serotonin release or the reuptake, the absorption, the metabolism of serotonin is going to contribute or not contribute to this issue. So if somebody takes an overdose of serotonergic drugs, usually what we will see is, especially if this is an intentional overdose, we may see a polypharmacy overdose. So they may take some SSRIs combined with an MAOI or other medications that affect serotonin and find themselves in this situation. That combination of SSRIs with MAOIs, that's probably the most well-known combination that can cause serotonin syndrome, affecting those two different receptors or those two different mechanisms, that being the reuptake of serotonin in an SSRI and then the MAOI or the monoamine oxidase inhibitors. With toxicology in general, we know that there's not a lot of data with this. Most of the data that exists with toxicology is based on case study. They're not going to do a randomized controlled trial where they give patients harmful levels or harmful medications that can interact with one another harmfully. So really, the information that we have is based upon case studies of patients that exhibited serotonin syndrome, where they looked at what could be contributing. So that is the information that we have. So it's really not that great of data, but that is how really we have a list of causative drugs. One of the things that we did find looking through this list is that there are medications that we carry that can definitely contribute to this, one of those being fentanyl. We know that with serotonin syndrome, our patients may present and they may be having pain. As when we talk about signs and symptoms, we'll see that one of those is muscle rigidity. So those muscle contractions, obviously that can be painful. If we're not careful though, and we give our patients fentanyl, we can make the situation worse because fentanyl is a serotonergic medication. So that's something that we would want to avoid. Another medication that is extremely common that we give is ondansetron or Zofran. And that medication is on the list of serotonergic medications. Now, I found this interesting because this is one that I was not real aware of that can contribute to this. So I did a little bit more in-depth research about Zofran in this situation. What I found was that in 2012, the World Health Organization issued a warning about it, stating that it could contribute to serotonin syndrome. I also found that there were some experts that argued against this. They did not feel that the mechanism and the way the physiology worked with Zofran really did contribute to this. So you'll find some articles. We actually did reference one of these articles where somebody was kind of arguing against ondansetron's role in this syndrome. However, it is listed on most lists that you will find of serotonergic medications. So definitely it would be avoided based upon the reference material that we can find. Other common meds to be aware of that can cause this, some things that we may see our patients have taken or they're under the influence of that can contribute, some of the most common ones, is cocaine, MDMA or ecstasy, dextromethorphan, which is in common cold medications, obviously DM, tricyclic antidepressants, oxycodone, tramadol, LSD, risperidone, ciprofloxacin, and fluconazole. So those are some of the common ones that we see. Another one is meperidine. I don't think a lot of patients are on or a lot of people are giving Demerol or meperidine anymore, but that is one of those things that can contribute as well.
So when we start to get into the signs and symptoms of serotonin syndrome, really we're looking at things that have a very fast onset, usually within the first 24 hours of ingestion of these things, or when these drugs have been combined recently, then we immediately start to see manifestations. And that's one of the characteristics of this syndrome that differentiates it from other syndromes and other disease processes. And we're going to also list a chart in the show notes that breaks this down a little bit, because really we're looking at, first of all, do we know what the patient took? If we know what the patient took, like an MAOI or SSRI, that's one thing that's going to obviously help us determine if it's serotonin syndrome or not. Because if we know exactly what it was and it doesn't fall under those serotonergic drug into that category, then obviously this is going to be something that we need to look at elsewhere outside of serotonin syndrome. And then we're going to start also looking at what are their symptoms? Because obviously serotonin syndrome, even though it has a wide array of symptoms, it is going to manifest itself differently than some of these other things, like malignant hyperthermia, for example, is one of those. And then also looking at the resolution, because serotonin syndrome can be resolved fairly quickly, and some of these other things cannot. So just keep that in mind. Look at that chart if you need to. Getting specifically into the signs and symptoms of serotonin syndrome, Brian had kind of mentioned some of these before, but those muscular manifestations, those muscular signs are really what we're going to see in these. That's pretty prominent. And that's going to be things like neuromuscular hyperactivity and autonomic hyperactivity or autonomic instability. But as we mentioned, you also can have neurological changes. So when you're looking at your patient's mental status, they may have changes in that. And severity of symptoms are going to vary depending on dosages and how much your patient has been exposed to, how much of their receptors are being activated, et cetera, because you can't have different levels of serotonin syndrome and the symptoms correlate with that. So if you have a person that's just having a mild bout of this, you're going to see things like hypertension, tachycardia, myodriasis, which is also pupil dilation, diaphoresis, shivering, tremors, myoclonus, and hyperreflexia. And that's going to be mostly in the lower extremities. But one of the determining things that helps rule this being a mild case is that temperature, because typically patients are afebrile at this point. But as you get into moderate signs and symptoms, that's when you start to see their temperature, their core temperatures increasing into a hypothermic state. And this is usually, depending on the literature you look at, some people say 38 degrees Celsius, some say 39, some say 40 degrees, but anywhere between 38 and 40 degrees Celsius, that's when we're going to consider this as being a significant sign. They can also have those peripheral receptor signs like hyperactive bowel sounds, horizontal ocular clonus, mild agitation, hypervigilance, and pressured speech. But what we're really going to focus on, and in the critical care transport specifically, what we're going to see are these severe cases. And this is where things really become dangerous, because not only can you have a combination of all the symptoms that we've already listed, but you can also have dramatic increases in them. So temperature, for example, can be greater than 41.1 degrees Celsius. And then you're going to see them to be very labile. They're going to have huge swings in their heart rate, their blood pressure. They're going to have delirium, muscle rigidity, seizures. They can have muscle breakdown. So rhabdo, myoglobinuria, metabolic acidosis, acute renal failure, ARDS, respiratory failure, diffuse intravascular clotting, and even coma and death. So obviously this is extremely important for us to recognize and be considering these things if we're ever administering any of these medications, because this is a definite potential.
And as far as the diagnosis of this, as Mike mentioned, those are the things that we're going to be looking at. Diagnosing serotonin syndrome really is that of exclusion. So we need to make sure that the patients don't have anything else that is causing this. We really need to have a high level of clinical suspicion for serotonin syndrome when we see those symptoms that Mike talked about, especially if the patients are under the influence of, or if they take these serotonergic medications. But as with all patients with behavioral presentations, there are some red flags that we need to be aware of. So if we think that they are potentially an overdose, so are they exhibiting any behavior that would make us think that maybe they overdosed. Some of the red flags obviously being depression, chronic pain, those type of things that we are aware of that can contribute to overdose. Some other things that can contribute to serotonin syndrome is patients in renal failure that take SSRIs. So because of the reduced or the impaired renal function, the idea is that these medications can build up in their system. Obviously, we are not going to be the end-all be-all as far as diagnosing this. Really, the gold standard is a toxicologist. So hopefully we're taking our patients to a center that has toxicology services there and that can really dig into this patient's scenario and identify if this is the case and provide effective treatment.
So aside from monitoring these signs and symptoms, there really is a formal way to examine these things, and there is certain criteria we can look at to come to a definitive diagnosis. One of the tools that used to be used is the Sternbach criteria, but that's a little bit older, and in an attempt to simplify that one, they've come up with the Hunter Serotonin Toxicity Criteria, or the HSTC. And we're going to also put in the show notes a chart that's going to help you determine if your patient is going to be considered to have serotonin syndrome or not based upon these signs and symptoms. We find that the HSTC is more sensitive criteria. It seems to be a better tool to use, something that we do want to look at. So when we're getting specifically into Hunter serotonin toxicity criteria, we basically look at if they're having spontaneous clonus, inducible clonus plus agitation or diaphoresis, ocular clonus plus agitation or diaphoresis, tremor and hyperreflexia, hypertonia, and a temperature above 38 to 39 degrees Celsius plus ocular inducible clonus. So if they have any of these things plus the use of a serotonergic agent, then they can be considered to have serotonin syndrome. The problem is, though, that muscle rigidity can actually mask some of the other muscular symptoms. So things like clonus, which is that rhythmic muscle spasm, and then hyperreflexia, even though those things might be present, your patient may have only muscle rigidity because of it masking those things. So just consider that. It's not always exactly straightforward, as we know. Also, we can look at some nonspecific lab values. They may be seen with leukocytosis. They may have a low bicarb, elevated creatinine, which includes some of that decreased renal function, as Brian had mentioned, and then also elevated AST and ALT. One thing to remember, though, even though you can get serum serotonin concentration levels, they have found that these don't correlate with the severity of the syndrome. So even though this might be something that is drawn, it's not necessarily going to determine how worse off your patient is going to be. So just keep that in mind.
So as far as the treatment of serotonin toxicity, really the key is to discontinue any serotonergic agent. So obviously we're not going to be giving these patients their SSRI medication if we have a suspicion that they have serotonin toxicity. Most of the treatment is going to be supportive. It's going to be identifying abnormalities in their vitals, in their oxygenation, in their fluid volume status, and treating those effectively, as we do with all of our patients. Clearly, these patients are going to be on continuous cardiac monitoring, and one of the medication therapies that we will see with these patients is giving them benzodiazepines as a sedative. We know that that helps to really reduce some of those muscle contractions, and it helps to reduce some of the anxiety with this, and helps to relieve some of those underlying symptoms. And something we see from time to time with this is the administration of serotonin antagonists. The problem with these is they're oral medications, so it's not going to be something really that we're going to be administering in the transport environment, but it is something that we may see these patients have received or will be receiving for this. If the patient exhibits hypertension and tachycardia, which we know can happen, we want to treat this effectively with the medications that we have available, whether that's a beta blocker such as Esmolol or nitroprusside. And the inverse is true as well. So if our patients present with hypotension, then treating that effectively as we typically do with our vasopressors. The most common time that we may see this is if we see the combination of MAOIs and propranolol. With those, we can give norepi, epi, phenylephrine, whatever vasopressors are within our protocol will help to treat the hypotension. As far as the muscle activity and fever, what are some things that we can do with that? Well, antipyretics, they're not going to help. The cause of their fever is from increased muscle activity. It's not because they have a reset temperature point in their hypothalamus. So it's not going to be useful. So the biggest things that's going to help is, as I mentioned with benzodiazepines, is sedation and even paralysis if this is if the patient is presenting with severe symptoms. So doing RSI and giving your induction and your paralytic and keeping them paralyzed. These patients may actually be on a paralytic infusion to help to reduce those muscle contractions and help to control the symptoms and the hyperthermia associated with this. Now, when we talk about paralytics, one medication that we definitely do want to avoid, however, is succinylcholine. You're probably aware that succinylcholine is associated with fasciculations that can cause hyperkalemia and any underlying conditions that contribute to this, things like muscular dystrophy, including serotonin syndrome. It's a contraindication for these patients because it can cause severe hyperkalemia and even worsening of the rhabdomyolysis. So it's definitely something that we would avoid in this situation. And as far as the prognosis, these patients, they can do well. If we appropriately treat them, we diagnose this early, they may have a reversal of symptoms within 24 hours with proper treatment.
So in conclusion, just remember, there's really no way to predict serotonin syndrome. It varies from patient to patient, so really, it needs to be on our radar at all times, especially if we're administering these medications, which I can safely say we all are at some point. And just remember to avoid polypharmacy and multi-drug regimens if possible. Really, we want to discontinue any serotonergic agents before starting another one. And remember, this can include MAOIs, antidepressants like SSRIs, opioids, over-the-counter medications, natural medications, and street drugs. That about wraps it up. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button if you haven't already. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at HLTH Podcast, or visit our website at heavylieshelmet.com. Until next time, this is the Heavy Lies the Helmet Podcast, signing off.